Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this June the 23rd on the West Coast, now June the 24th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Tonight's guests are both essayists, journalists, you could say, as well, investigators of science and metaphysics. The first guest hosts his own website called educate-yourself.org, and he publishes the works of our second guest on the site. First of all, webmaster Ken Adachi, and our second guest, Zora Novastar Livingstone. Gentlemen, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Hello, Don. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Don.
Yes. Isn't it interesting, all the crazy stuff going on with the internet these days? It's amazing. It's like they have to interfere with, they being the powers that be and their minions, have to interfere with everything. Don't you find that a bit aggravating?
Well,
yes, I do.
However, though, I might say that I feel fortunate and grateful that more disastrous events have not unfolded in the last few days. We had mentioned in private discussions, we all know that June 21, being the summer solstice, is a big deal day for the satanic crowd. They have all kinds of murder rituals that they perform in order to gain black magic energy, if you will, for their nefarious agendas. Mm-hmm. And I thought the possibility was reasonably strong that some sort of event would unfold on June 22, of course, 22 being one of their numbers that they love so much, a doubling of 11. And so I felt very glad when June 22 came and went. There was a significant earthquake in the same region of Japan that I believe happened on 22. Maybe I'm one day off. It might have been the 23rd. It might have been the next day. But it's very interesting that if we read the article posted by Jim Stone on May 28th. I posted on my website on May 30, but he's affirming what ZSL and I and you and had been saying from early March forward, that the tsunami event in Japan was artificially created by nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. We had also said that the Fukushima explosions were also acts of sabotage, and he affirmed those two aspects of what we've been saying since March 12 forward. But beyond that, he expanded on a story that I didn't pick up on, and I give him full credit for, is that the reported earthquake, it began as an 8.9, and then within a day, within 24 hours, they had elevated it to a 9.1. Mm-hmm. And then within 2 or 3 days, they settled back to 9.0. And Jim Stone made the observation that had this severe an earthquake hit Japan, northern Japan, a number of buildings would have been demolished. Now, it's true, some buildings in some areas in that north, let's see, how should we describe it? I guess northeastern region of Japan, where you know Daiichi is and Fukushima, and that is the side of Japan where the earthquake supposedly occurred. Yes, some buildings did, you know, collapse and have damage, but if it truly was a 9.0, the devastation would have been throughout Japan. Buildings would have collapsed throughout the entire breadth of Japan. And in the area where it supposedly hit 9.0, those buildings should have been flattened.
Mm-hmm.
And he correctly observed that none of that happened. What happened is that where the areas where the waters, the tsunami waters flooded in, life was going on as tranquil as possible in these areas. You didn't have people running in the street. It's true, some areas did get a warning of sorts, and you had emergency personnel encouraging people to leave immediately for high ground. That's true. But nevertheless, in the bulk of cases, we saw the video, we all seen the video, of water just sort of placidly moving in almost and mm-hmm. inundating these areas, flooding them. But you didn't see evidence of building damage in most cases, in most of those videos. You just saw this
or even
flooding
the
event.
Yeah, there was one video that I saw where a bus was driving actually into the tsunami. They were coming down.
Unaware of what was coming, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And they went under an underpass, or under an overpass, I guess you would call it. Yeah. And I don't know, I don't recall if that was a railroad overpass or not, but they went under this bridge, let's say, and made a left turn. And while you're watching this, you're seeing the waves, like you said, sort of placidly moving in, just
right.
filling up from ground
yeah,
up.
Yeah, just, you know, yeah, right. It's sort
and
of
then
a.
began the destruction of the buildings at that point.
Exactly. It's right. The power of the water caused buildings to collapse. That's true. But mm-hmm. these were buildings that were intact, you know, as before the water hit it. So that's an important thing to note. Mm-hmm. And, The earthquake, and maybe it was yesterday. Yesterday's the 22nd. Today's the 23rd. So maybe it was yesterday.
Yeah, so 2100 hours Greenwich on 22nd for the 7th.
Okay,
6.
Well,
7.
Then that is the June 22 event then. I was expecting an event, and I suppose that's it. However, this 6.7 earthquake, if I got the numbers correct, according to Jim Stone in his May 28th article, he had said that there was at no time a 9.0 earthquake. What he said there was a series of 6-point-something earthquakes, 6.7, 6.9, something like that, in close proximity to each other, but that was the, and he also made the case, or at least made the statement that the epicenters were much farther, closer, I should say, to land, to Japan, than what was reported in the news. The news had it much farther out to sea.
Mm-hmm.
So we had another earthquake yesterday reported in the same vicinity as the one that, you know, we were told called a tsunami, yet there was no tsunami. And there was also no, as far as I know, based on what I heard on the radio, no significant building damage from this earthquake that took. So we should pay attention to a couple of things, that this adds further evidence that the tsunami was not caused, the tsunami of March 11th was not caused by the so-called earthquakes, that in fact mm-hmm. they were caused by undersea nuclear devices that were detonated that caused the water to. Water is an incompressible medium. People have to remember that. You can compress gas. You can't compress water. If you create an explosion at the bottom of the ocean, the water has to move. It won't compress. So obviously, they directed and they created that tsunami. So we need to remember this. And mm-hmm. yet there was no tsunami yesterday. So to me, it reinforces the clear observation that Zias made right from the beginning, that this was an act of sabotage. And all the events that followed in the wake of that so-called accidental event, which was not an accident at all, and all that followed in the wake of the Fukushima sabotage are an organized psyops. Now, I've named it the radiation psyops.
Yeah.
It's still continues. The fallout of that continues in every news item I hear, because there's always reference to the adjustments that we here in the United States, and we have to make due to the economic realities of the what happened in Fukushima, as if this staged event, this is the let's say the psyops.
They're
the
blaming it on water too, you know, just like they are in Nebraska.
Exactly. Thank you. That's where I was going to go. I was going to briefly, because that was in the news today on AM radio. As I'm working away at the bench here, I'm listening to talk radio. I sort of flip back and forth between AM and FM. And yes, they were bringing up the story about how strange it is that the Nebraska nuclear plant is being presented almost as if it's in a dangerous or smoldering situation, and of course the allusions to Fukushima were immediate.
They're saying that there's going to be, because of water levels, that the dams are going to break and we're going to have a tsunami on the Missouri
River. That is it, my friend. They create this false staged event in Japan and then use that propaganda, the fallout from that for the, you know, next 2 or 3 months, you know, mainstream media, Jeff Rentz's website loaded with scare stories about the terrible radiation danger that's engulfing us all and how we have to get rid of all nuclear plants. And this is terrible and yada, yada, yada.
We need a no-fly zone over there.
Exactly.
Like the tsunami is going to go after the airplanes too now.
Right. All these are psyops to set you up to believe these staged events. Thank you. That's exactly where I was going to go on this. So,
you know, if I could package that stuff up, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but if I could package these stories in a bag that's sort of moisture resistant, I could use it as fertilizer in my garden.
Yes, you could, because that's what manure does. You know? Fertilizes gardens very, very, very well.
I'm not trying to make you laugh, CS, in the background. It's aggravating, it really is.
It is aggravating, yes, you're right. But I guess I wanted to get that out because it was on my mind. It was kind of bubbling, over there, and I had to say something there. But I did mention to you just before the show began that I was really going to touch on just some philosophical thoughts, and this is a perfect segue into that area. We must not allow ourselves, ordinary people like me, like you, like ZS, who are living life here, to be overly influenced by a doom and gloom story, scare stories, which the both so-called alternative and mainstream media are replete with. Because this is the bulk of the news you get in either mainstream or alternative media. It's bad news. That's what you're hearing 99.999% of the time, one of varying degrees. A lot of people turn to a site like Jeff Rentz around the world for news. And there's a lot of good information, let's say valuable information, let's put it that way. But it is also an overriding theme, if you will, at Jeff Rentz's website of doom and gloom. It's death and destruction. One story after another is depressing in nature. And Jeff Rentz himself is totally depressed in terms of his own attitude. I've been privy to private conversations with Jeff on many occasions and the conversations he has with others. And what you find is a guy who's just, waiting for the sky to fall. It's all over.
Yeah,
to use his very words, it's all over with. He's, just a lot of screaming and crying. The New World Order is a done deal as far as Jeff Rentz is concerned, and he's just waiting for the hammer to drop. So it's to him, I mentioned this in our last talk, it's just a waiting game until, the final death blow comes. And that's the dumbest thing you can possibly, mindset you can possibly get into. But if you immerse yourself in negative stories 24/7, that's the mindset you're going to have. And what I wanted to try to bring out today is that thank God for the large numbers of ordinary people who are unaware of the conspiracy, let's say the conspiracy blog world, okay? They don't know about chemtrails. They don't know about the New World Order. They don't know that whether it's George Bush or an illegal alien by the name of using the name of Barack Obama, that every guy who's delivered to us as the president is simply a puppet of these behind-the-scenes manipulators. They don't know that the whole, not all Congress, but the bulk of Congress is controlled, manipulated, blackmailed to the nth degree by these forces. They're hardly working for the people of the United States. They're working for vested interests. Say, I can say the same of the Pentagon. All your large corporations, if you will, and the people who run them are in bed with these powers. We call them the powers that be, etc. They're unaware of that. They're leading an ordinary life. They're going to high school. They're going to college. They're worried about grades. They're worried about making the football team. They're worried about, getting a girlfriend. All the ordinary things of life. You have, thank God, hundreds of thousands, probably millions of people who are trying to pursue careers in music. So they're practicing 8 or 10 hours a day, and they're gradually working their way up that very slow incline hill we're both familiar with, Don. And you have a lot of people who are pursuing degrees in science and so forth because they have ideas about accomplishing something in these areas. The mindset of, let's say the mind waves or the energy waves that emanate from ordinary people who lead ordinary lives, who are simply not aware of all these doom and gloom stories, all these psyops designed to depress us, their normal energy of, let's say, trying to live a positive life. And, you know, it's unfortunate for the people in Afghanistan and Iraq and those areas where, you know, the U.S. military-industrial complex has, you know, made victims of this, of the war game. They can't enjoy what I'm alluding to here. And I my heart goes out to all innocent victims who are in theaters of war, okay, whose lives are, who had, you know, a normal life perhaps before 2001. And, you know, it's been anything but since. So I'm in sympathy with all these people who've been victimized by these war mongerers and these war profiteers who are really, you know, stimulating these wars. And of course, the Zionist group who has plays a big role in instigating these events. So, but I'm talking about people who, let's say, are still living in, like in the United States, Western Europe and Asia, in relatively stable, normal societies in which things are functioning, the economy's functioning normally, that their ordinary lives are helping, believe it or not, to dilute the negative energy of the dark side. Mm-hmm. Because their aspirations are in a positive direction. Mm-hmm. And the whole world, all 6.9 billion, whatever the total number is of humans on this planet, the mind energy, the waves that emanate from every human and from every alien, extraterrestrial who's on this planet, for that matter, from every animal, so every living species on this planet, their mind waves affect and shape the totality of the reality we experience every day.
Yeah. Can I add something or interject something to what you're saying? Because you're referring to the military-industrial complex, and we have covered on many shows and in our mutual essays even, or articles that we write, research-based articles. These aren't opinion pieces. These are based on factual information that we're able to locate and bring to the light. There has been at least, I'm being very general when I say this, at least 100 years of infiltration of this country. And when you say CIA, everyone thinks that you're talking about an organization that is American in design, in its foundation. And in reality, it's been created by this international cabal. And it's funded by the international cabal, by all of their illegal activities. Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing right now is that they have invested so much time in that 100 years, not to mention you could go back to the inception of the United States of America as a country, from the days of the founding fathers, and it was set up to be sabotaged. You can see that they have invested so much that they can't stand to see it unravel. Yet that's mm-hmm. what's happening. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with me on that before?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's sort of the good news. That's why we have said on a number of shows that the New World Order agenda is going south. I say it, you said it, and it is going south because the consciousness of humanity is rising, and as more people catch on to the manipulation, once they realize this is a gradual process. There is no way you can go from being completely unaware of the New World Order agenda and be conversant in all areas of the conspiracy in a couple of weeks. It's a gradual process in which gradually you're acclimating yourself to the realization that you've been misled and betrayed from childhood forward. It's hard to reject ideas and postulates which you've assumed to be true from your earliest days. Mm-hmm. You know, as a child, you learn things from teachers, from parents, etc. Of course, they were completely sincere in their efforts to educate you. They thought it was true, but anyway, these are we learn many things that we've been misled. But
yeah, we've been indoctrinated into belief system.
Right.
See,
right. Yes.
All the while telling us that our education, which was really propagandized indoctrination, was the path to knowledge. No, yeah. it never was knowledge. The knowledge is what we're revealing. The truth about the fraud that's been committed on us.
Yes. And the greatest source of that education is your inner voice. The greatest source is your higher self. We all have a higher self. There's more to our soul than just what is revealed to us when we look in the mirror here on Earth. We have a larger oversoul, it's called. Mm-hmm. We all have this. And the more advanced, or let's see, the most advanced aspect of our oversoul is referred to as the higher self. So the higher self is always whispering to us. And if we don't do things which cut off that avenue of communication, we can hear this voice. And the more we, let's say, try to follow the path of being earnest, truthful, and honest in all things, this voice can, let's say, come through more clearly and easily. And if we engage in behavior that is destructive in nature, that is damaging, harmful, etc., what happens is that gradually we acquire what's known as a lax conscience. Now, the expression a conscience is this whispering of your higher self to you, trying to lead you to the truth of things. So we usually refer to conscience as a as, let's say, an inner voice that is reminding us when we're doing something wrong. Well, when you do something wrong, what's characteristic of wrongness or evil, it's dishonesty, it's lack of truth. And things that are right, that are good, are truthful by nature. So it's your higher self, your conscience, is your higher self trying to whisper very, very, in a very light voice to you what is true, and to, you know, to try to discern what is true from what is false. And then once you know what is true, you have an obligation to behave in a way that is on the path of truthfulness and light and honor and positive ends, okay? So it's really quite easy to discern the truth from within if you just do the things that encourage the communication to broaden, to widen, to become more clear. That includes eating the sort of foods that raise energy rather than lower your vibration. That includes processing thoughts that raise your vibration rather than lower your vibration. And it also includes doing deeds that raise your vibration rather than lower your vibration. So if you think, act, and let's say have a direction in life that is towards a truthful, productive goal, this communication will increase over time, and you can not only learn the truth of things, but you can enjoy life more, because that's what we have to remember here. Too often we become too immersed in these stories about articles, exposés about the New World Order and the players and all these dreadful events that these dark characters orchestrate and victimize other people with. Too often we become over-immersed in that. And then it colors our thoughts, it colors our personality, and we gotta not allow that to happen. We must think about balance. There is a need, a daily infusion of cheerful thoughts, of beneficial thoughts, reading, etc. Material should be of a positive nature. And also enjoy life by humor. You have to laugh every day. And it's hard today, particularly. I don't get broadcast TV anymore. I'm starved for comedy on the radio. The only place you find it, at least where I am, I'm in Southern California, between 3 and 5 a.m., Imus in the Morning is the only guy that's got some humor. He's on ABC during those hours, has at least some infusion of humor there that makes me laugh. I just starve for humor. That's why I've mentioned this to you before, that I really hunt around to try to find a station with a host who has a little bit of a wit, you know, who can be quick, because it's very important to laugh daily, because it really does recharge your batteries. It's a tremendous source of recharging energy. And music. Now, you play these songs on these interview shows, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of people might find odd because of the subject matter that we talk about. It's very serious, you know, and so yet you typically throw in two tunes, one near the beginning and one near the end. It's okay, because this acts as a relief, and we ought to go to music, and good music too, you know.
It's a way to transmute that negative energy.
Absolutely, Don. So that's why I'm all for these little musical interludes. Here in Southern California, we have exactly one classical radio station, music radio station on the air. We used to have two, but they eliminated one, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago to country and western format. Now we have exactly one classical music station. Now, I don't listen to classical music around the clock. I listen to talk radio most of the time. But I do switch over to the music for intervals. I go for a walk or something, a little energy. I've been listening to talk radio all day. I got to switch over to music for a while just to absorb something that is nourishing to the soul. And, of course, if you're playing it, you're getting a charge there, but good music is good for us. And good reading, I read when I can find the time. I read books that are really interesting and beneficial and positive. So I'm going to close out with this here, so Zias can express his thoughts. But we have to remember this, all of us who are immersed in this New World Order game. don't give up the things in, of ordinary life that give you pleasure because you become overexposed to the New World Order takeover game, because it'll sadden you, it'll take energy away from you. No. You have to have balance in all things. So I'll end with that, Don.
I agree with what you're saying. I think some people tend to gravitate towards entertainment, if you want to use that word, something to take their mind off of that which they have great difficulty facing, or something to just divert their attention to something else, because in deep inside they sense that they're in need of some kind of relief from all of this, you see. And that's really the core of what we talk about when we say use discernment. We're not asking you to believe these things. These are things that you can apply in your own life, and you take back your power when you do that. Realize that if you go to the baseball game in the summer, or the basketball game in the winter, or the football game in the late fall and early winter, that you're doing that, and observe what's going on, and ask yourself, how do these things that are going on at these events, for instance, the music that they play, or the people that they bring to create this nonstop show, this endless stream of events that they're controlling, that you're out of control. Ask yourself, what impact does that have on me? What impact does that have on this crowd? What is really going on here? Why do they do this? I mean, it's a football game. Why, you know, professional football, why bring 5 and 6 year old kids out there to play football on the field? You see, it's part of the dumbing down process of the adults who are responsible for raising the children. And at the same time, they're teaching the children to be programmed to accept this as some kind of normal activity.
Yes.
And really, there's no purpose other than to just give your eyes something to look at. You see, people lining up in rows, people running this way, running that way, all in the pursuit of getting the ball, you know, and crossing a line with it. That's the escapism that we have. Society is nothing but a series of don't cross this line, don't cross this line. There's a line over here. Don't cross that or else, you see. But then we're encouraged in these sports that to put the ball beyond the line, to hit the ball beyond the line, or to put it in the circle, which is nothing but a connected line, meaning basketball, you know, the basketball hoop. It's all about you're in bounds, you're out of bounds. This is acceptable, this is not acceptable. And we get this everywhere we go, really. And people really don't look at it that deeply. They don't care to. They figure, why should I, what good does it do me to understand this? Well, these are the same people that go into denial when you tell them what's really going on. They don't really care to know. And I suppose that's okay, because on a soul level, that's the choice they made. They made the choice to be ignorant and try to cope with life through a synonymous ignorance. What else can you call it? And that's not judgment. That's just an observation. Anyway, I don't mean to take up all the time, but those are the thoughts that your words bring to my mind. Is that
very good parallel analysis, Don?
ZS, would you like to comment on what either one of us said, or would you like to change the subject and talk about bowling? Which is another way of rolling between lines.
Another ball down the line. Make sure it doesn't go into the foul line or in the gutter. Well, talking about gutters, we have...
gutters.
We have the Mississippi River that's overflowing its bank, and the Missouri and the Souris River and all that. And of course, it's all HARP-related. And they've been trying to create a flood situation throughout the whole great Great Plains states, and it goes into Canada too, and Saskatchewan and Manitoba. And the and it's also trying to cut down on the food supply, but there are so many acres of land which are usually do not produce because they're too dry or high and dry, which will be wet this year, and we'll get, I believe we'll get abundant crops.
Mm-hmm. I think the floods that we experienced a few years ago in Iowa, that virtually no one but the nightly news would report, and they would just show whole sections of farmland and houses underwater for months, and no one really became concerned about that. I think that was a trial run for what's going on now. They tweaked this. But there is also, I'm going to add this, and I don't doubt what you're saying about HAARP, but there is also an off-planet element to what's going on here, too. You see, they make these prophecies, or they get people to prophesy that there's going to be some catastrophic event that's going to split the United States in half. And conveniently, that's going to create these New World Order regions of population. And so they're boxing people into a fenced off area using these quote unquote disasters as the pretext for having that occur. But go ahead.
Yeah, they were trying to trigger an earthquake on the New Madrid fault, but it was blocked. It was plain blocked. And so since that didn't work, they couldn't produce any hurricanes out in the Atlantic, and they just stirred up the thunderstorms, and well, they've been stirring it up for over a year now in the Great Plains. And though I just see it as futility.
Mm-hmm.
It's just total futility. There was a 7.4 earthquake in the Fox Islands of Aleutian Chain 2.5 hours ago, 7.4. And looking at the seismograms, it was a natural earthquake. So there's a tsunami warning on that. Hasn't come down yet. But the way that the earthquake hit the Aleutian Chain, it won't affect Anchorage, but it could affect Hawaii and California.
Now, so the waves are actually moving.
They haven't called it off yet.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Or the currents. Would this be current driven or?
This earthquake it was 25 kilometers deep, and it looks, the seismogram is a normal bell shaped earthquake. It's pent up tectonic pressure releasing, not an artificial earthquake. Unless they've scrambled the seismograms for various events have been all over the map, wrong in quite a few situations. Like I was reading all the seismograms from the March 11th event in Japan, knowing that they're all artificial, and not knowing which is true and which is false, and believing the seismogram for the 9.0. What they gave there looked like it had lasted for about 10, 15 minutes of solid shaking. And they say that Tokyo was shaking for 10, 15 minutes. And that would, if it wasn't one big earthquake, then it was a series of artificial earthquakes raining down on the whole coast there like a waffle iron of earthquakes in order to create the shaking of Tokyo and the breaking of glass there. And they would be in the 4, 5, and 6 range, which they could produce from their technologies in space.
Now, there was a video, I don't know if you saw it, it was posted on YouTube, of a Japanese office space. They didn't identify what kind of business it was, but I had the feeling that it might have been related to one of the TV networks. They had a video.
So three people went out the window.
I didn't see that, but I did see them holding a few computer monitors, preventing them from falling off their workstations. But the reason I bring this up, because it seemed to me that it only lasted a minute to a minute and a half.
Right.
And there were a few people just sitting there sort of in the Zen modality of, you know,
okay,
if I'm going to be killed by this building, it's not going to do me any good to run. I might as well just stay right here where things aren't really flying around all over the place. It didn't seem that drastic. Certainly it didn't last for 10 minutes, but I found it interesting that they filmed all of this.
Yeah, so the film survived.
Yeah.
The building survived. Most of the buildings
and the people
survive.
Yeah, and the people too. And this was a high rise. It was obvious because you could see some other buildings from on the right side where they aimed the camera at one point, and you could see that there were some tall buildings and that you were up pretty high if you were on the same floor from the vantage point that the camera provided.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't seem as powerful as what they claimed.
Yeah. Also, the tsunami that came up on Sendai and on the coast there did not have the profile of the normal tsunami. The normal tsunami has a wave that crests, and this thing is like an expanding water supply. It is probably steam-driven from the trench, 10,000 feet or 20,000 feet deep, off the coast of Japan, where the nuke was. And it's the same video happened with the earthquake in Indonesia off the coast of
Port
Sumatra.
Yeah,
and Bonifacio, which was supposed to be hit by a 9.0 earthquake. Video shows the town's totally intact, and people are going about their business and driving in their mopeds. And then suddenly this water rises up and pushes into the town, causing huge destruction and pulling everybody back out. Again, that wasn't a typical tsunami cresting wave. That was a surge. So if we ever see this again and you see no crest, no wave breaking, and it's just a surge of water, then we'll know that it is a steam-driven nuclear explosion, or steam bubble wave.
Interestingly, 2 days before this event, much like basically a couple of days before the event in Japan, but I'm speaking now about the Indonesian earthquake that took place in the Trobriand Trough is what they call it.
Right.
Coincidentally, that's the area where I did my Obama research for the Three Stooges Go to Washington. That whole general area,
west coast of Sumatra.
Yes. When I discovered this anomaly of the disappearance of Michael Clark Rockefeller in the same year that Obama was born, and the fraudulent nature of his search and rescue mission and his disappearance, the representation of phony compiled photographs as if they documented his having been there. I studied that area. And I happened to be there 2 days before this quake occurred, and I discovered south and southwest of that area, actually south of Papua New Guinea, on the southern side of Port Moresby, not the northeast side where that would be, there were two underwater bases.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting that these are occurring in the proximity of these underwater bases, and these are alien bases. Yes, I said it. Mm-hmm. And I'll say it again.
Okay.
Who was it? Bobby Darin? Did he have that line in one of his songs? Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off, but is that coincidence, you think? Or you think I'm tuning into something like Ken was describing?
Well, I believe that there are underground bases or off underwater bases, and mm-hmm. there's been a lot of UFOs that have been seen plunging into the sea. And I just wrote a piece about the high strangeness of the bottom of the ocean. And there's miracles happening down there, and the technologies of the extraterrestrials to plunge to the bottom of the ocean and work with what's down there is undoubtable. People have seen it for a long, long time.
Now, you know, speaking of that, and I'm going to speak about the base, which is in the Philippine Sea. And there is a ridge, an underwater ridge that sort of gives it some protection on the east side of where this base is. And the base is described as an island, if you can believe that. It's an underwater base, thousands of feet under on the floor of the ocean. And they have a story. I did some research on the artist who did the 3D depictions of the constructions that make up this base. And he describes it as an address in Tokyo, which is ridiculous. Okay? And
there's no addresses in Tokyo. You have to get directions from the natives as to where things are. There is no address in Tokyo. You use phone numbers.
Well, he describes it as, and he gives it a name, and he's naming this island, okay? Now, there are several stories posted on the internet about this island that they discovered it many years ago, and at the end of World War II, the American Navy was protecting it because China was trying to take it over, and it's always been declared Japanese territory. And when the tide is low, suddenly these buildings appear on the shore, on the beach, which is absolutely ridiculous. But they created this story, and they talk about the fact that there's a lighthouse in the middle of that ocean. But they don't show pictures of it. In fact, they took the pictures off of the Google Earth site where the base is, so you can't see it. But I have a copy of it. So,
which island of the Philippines?
No, this isn't an island. The name, it isn't an island. What it is, it's an underground base that they're proclaiming belongs to Japan.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So it's nowhere near the Philippines, but it's in the Philippine Sea. Okay.
Okay.
And there is a pad, like a landing pad, circular landing pad, that has this protrusion coming out of one side of it, which looks sort of like a catwalk that you would see on a stage in a public performance. So you have this round, perfectly round circle with the letter H on it. As if that's
both,
or helipad. Okay. They're representing that this is a helipad. This is in the bottom of the ocean. Okay. Now, it's known to be an underwater base. Let's put it that way. But they create this crazy story that the guy who did the drawings is identifying that it's an address in Tokyo. And he gives two addresses to it. Okay. So, I'll have to email you the information on it. I thought I did, but
yeah, you did, and it looks like a geared wheel.
That's embellishment around the thing. But just look at the concrete structure. These are concrete structures, by the way.
Right. Yeah.
That they're claiming are going below the tide, and then showing themselves when the tide recedes. I mean, it's a ridiculous story, and that somehow Japan is allowing the United States to watch guard over this island so that the Chinese don't take it. Just totally bogus story. More fertilizer, let's put it that way.
Okay. Grow good crops this year.
Yeah. But I wanted to share that with you because this is It's certain to me that base had something to do with what happened in Japan, and likely the two bases south of Port Moresby had something to do with what happened in the Trobriand Trough, which is mystically the area where Michael Rockefeller was said to have been hiding out.
Wow.
You know, and that's in my Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part B. I cover that.
Right.
In great depth. So, Ken, you were right when you said this illegal alien. You don't know how right that is.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, I understand the double entendre.
Yes, exactly. So, yes, if I can bring up this Chilean volcano and some observations I think that you made, and I actually sent you a message on something I noticed, too.
Okay.
That the ejections kind of mirror some of the photographs of 9/11.
Yes, they do. Yeah, it looks like it's a vertical column of ash. Of course, assume it's rising, or is it? It forms a mushroom cloud.
It had risen. Well, this is beneath the mushroom cloud. There's this ejection, and you see debris fanning out like an umbrella coming downward, just like the buildings when they were coming down.
So was there an energy beam used on the volcano?
That's my impression.
Same type of energy as was used on the Twin Towers.
Absolutely. And there's video evidence that they used something from a helicopter as well as probably from space on 9/11.
Yeah. Dropping a nuke into a crater.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Setting it up with charges and then setting them off.
Well, the amount of energy that was released on going up 16 kilometers is similar to the amount of energy that was released by what they call the Tsar bomb in Novaya Zemlya in 1962, when the Soviet Union blew off the biggest bomb that was ever detonated, and that was 400 megatons.
Holy cow.
And that led to the declaration of both the Soviet Union and America that from then on decided not to explode bombs in space or in the air. And so it's supposedly been all underground since then, but there's been a lot of things happening in the oceans, and of course tactical nukes have been used in the air.
Now, coincidentally, I followed... I don't know if I mentioned this to you. I know I did to Ken. Maybe I did to you as well. I've sort of mapped out an area where there is strong evidence of Lemuria, and it goes down to Chile. It literally goes. I just followed the path in the water. Next thing you know, I'm on the coast of Chile.
Yeah,
and it goes all the way up to Alaska. Up the western side of the United, from Chile up South America to Central America, United States and Canada, and then up to Alaska, and it swung back to the underwater base in the Philippine Sea, but on the east side of the ridge, which is a semi-crescent shaped ridge that. Appears to afford some protection to that area.
Right.
There's a reason for that base being there, by the way.
Okay.
And it's because of currents and what is in the base. So.
Yeah. When you say Lemuria, the famous book on Lemuria is by James Churchwood, which is has its around Easter Island and Fiji and Guam, not Guam, but mainly in the South Pacific around the equator. And he got that information from a cave in Tibet in the 1930s from some Tibetans.
It's a pretty expansive area, though, I have to tell you, because the evidence is down there. Now, again, it's suffering from the same... artistic masking, if you want to call it, airbrushing of the images. But there are a heck of a lot more pyramids on the bottom of the Pacific Ocean than there are on the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. and you can see whole areas. I spoke with a couple of people about this. I got the impression that I was looking at an area in one particular location about the size of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And it looked like they were all houses intact, but airbrushed over.
Oh.
And I had the impression, amazing, much like I did with Atlantis, that Lemuria was just flattened like a pancake.
Mm-hmm. And
any thoughts on that?
Well, flattened like a pancake, of course, James Churchward in his book, Last Continent of Mu, or Lemuria, mm-hmm, says that what caused the submergence of Lemuria was the popping of natural gas bubbles underneath the continent. And that caused the subsidence. And, of course, with the nuclear fracking that's happening around the planet right now, are they trying to cause another submergence?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I was unaware. I mean, I hadn't read that, but...
I'm pulling that out of my memory bank, so I read it when I was 10 years old in 1960. But I remember the natural gas explanation from James Churchward.
Now, there have been writings, ancient writings, on the continent of Pan, and I think Pan is merely just another name for the same continent.
Yes, yes.
And that Japan is basically from Pan.
Right. There's another continent before that called Hyperborea, which could be Siberia or northern North America.
But that would be Hypoborea now, right?
Not boring, actually. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to share that with you. Ken, any thoughts on that, what we're talking about here, if we haven't put you to sleep?
No, I'm fascinated by this conversation. It's, you know, those photos, I eventually will get them up on my website. As I told you privately, I've sort of been concentrating on orders for the past many days, and I haven't been spending much time at the computer. However, though, those undersea shots you have of both the Atlantic and the Pacific, it's just remarkable the structures that are revealed. And I'll just mention it again. I was completely unaware that the satellites that Google Earth uses, I just presume that the surface of the ocean body, you would just see water. But in fact, they can see, the satellite imaging devices can see through the water and can literally photograph or image, I should say, the bottom of the ocean. And when you zoomed in, you found all kinds of incredible megalithic structures that are clearly made by intelligent life, because their shape can not possibly be found in nature. Perfectly rectangular square, for instance, off the coast of Nova Scotia, that when I did a rough guesstimate, a rough measurement, I should say, based on the known area of Nova Scotia itself, I guesstimated that it would be about 176 miles wide. This is a perfectly square rectangle that can be seen at the bottom of the ocean off the coast of Nova Scotia. You have the screenshot of it. You sent it to me. That is at least 176 miles wide.
Well, that means the Pillsbury Doughboy, or Gumby, which is on the eastern end toward Gibraltar, is probably somewhere between 700 and 1,000 miles.
Yes, because that structure is much larger than the rectangle. You're absolutely right. So when I mention megalith structures, I'm talking megalith on a astronomical level here. This is a phenomenal find, Don, that when others... see these, when people see these photos, a lot of people are going to be going to Google Earth, and who knows whether the images will be left intact or not. But I know you've already captured these images already, so.
Yeah, they taught me how to do that when I was working for the CIA. So.
Yes, right. So anyway, it's yeah, a phenomenal right. find, Don. I mean, people are going to really be impressed when they see the crops that I've made of the small number of screenshots you sent me. I don't know, you sent me 7 or 10 or so, but I know that you have over 100 now. And the crops of these images, these structures, people are going to flip out. It's a phenomenal find, Don.
And they're really being hidden. That's the crazy thing about it is their intention is to hide this from us so we don't see it. Why? Well, of course, we would find out the truth. Now, yeah. I'd like to share something briefly with both of you, too. Occasionally, one of us or all of us will get a bogus email. And if you do a little research on the sender of the email, it often opens up some very interesting research that's being conducted. And though we're told crazy stories like, well, Earth's history goes back 3,500 years, some say 4,000. I've heard people say 10,000. I'm speaking about man's presence on the Earth. And I stumbled across some research, DNA genetic research that's going on in the state of Illinois that is connecting certain Scottish families to the humanity that's been on the bloodlines. This is bloodline research we're talking about here.
Okay.
That goes back 30,000 years. Now, I'm not blown away by that figure because I've discerned civilizations that are in certain parts of the United States that existed 40,000 years ago. And I've been able to corroborate this information. Now, who would I corroborate that with, do you suppose? Somebody who's been around a lot longer and is still around is the simple answer. And we've talked about that group on this show a number of times. So I'm finding confirmation even being conducted in universities in this country while they flat out want to deny that any of this is true. They're publishing the information, and I can provide you with that.
There, I have read, and CS probably has probably more knowledge in this area than I do, but I had read a number of things from sources that I feel are very reliable. There was a man here in Southern California who lived in San Diego most of his life. His name was Mark Probert. From immediately following World War II, around 1945-1946, he began to have experiences, let's say, and his wife was telling him of these voices that were, he was speaking in these tongues that she couldn't understand during his sleep. Long story short, he went to various psychiatrists to try to find out what was going on, and of course, initially they were, you know, they didn't have people who were enlightened enough to understand what was going on. But eventually they did run into somebody who hypnotized Mark and realized that he was, in fact, in communication with discarnate beings who were telling him really invaluable information. Mm-hmm. And the dominant personality of these various beings who were channeled through Mark Probert was an individual called Iyada, and this fellow actually his full name was Iyada de Shite, that's his full name, but he came from a civilization that was in roughly what is the area known today as Mongolia, but his civilization went back an enormous amount of time. I mean, we're talking, you know, in the millions of years here. So there have been highly organized civilizations that go back for millions of years here on Earth that have risen, fallen, been completely obliterated. Or, for instance, his civilization mostly ended with massive earthquakes. Easily, they didn't all die, but he had a rather high civilization. He himself was a priest in this society, and he describes exactly how he died, how his physical body died. He was in a temple at the time, and just like in the movies, you know, the everything came tumbling down on him. But this fellow was channeled for many years, from approximately 1946 until Mark Probert's passing, which I think was in 1968. So you have about 21 years of recorded talks by Iyada that make for fabulous listening. I mean, the guy is Iyada was a very, let's say, ordinary guy in terms of his wit. He's very funny, very witty, loved to intersperse his talks with jokes. I mean, the guy's jokes were just fabulous, and I was lucky enough to inherit to acquire a large number of these cassette recordings of Iyada from a good friend of mine who passed on a couple of years ago. He himself actually came to channel Iyada himself. This is another equally amazing story. He was listening to Iyada tapes while having a job as a courier man. He did deliveries from state to state in this courier service. And so he was behind the wheel for hours at a time, and he used to listen to these tapes. Well, after, you know, many months of doing this, Iyada came through to him directly. He contacted Iyada directly, and he had many remarkable stories to tell me. But Iyada has been a source of fabulous info about what happened in Earth's early history, as does the books of Lhampa Rampa. T. Lhampa Rampa's books.
You mean Lobsang Rampa?
I'm sorry, Lobsang Rampa. Equally filled with incredible anecdotes of earlier civilizations that go back long periods of time. He's mentioned there are these halls of remembrances sequestered around the earth. They're particularly notably located in the Himalayan mountains that only certain adepts are managed to find, as he was, and reveal what is there. But so the history of the earth goes back a much longer period. I mean, even the books of Zechariah Sitchin talk about the Anunnaki doing mining operations in southern Africa 450,000 years ago. So that's almost a 500,000 right there. And yeah, there's plenty of evidence of the, scrolls, et cetera, from the Sumerian period that evidence the history of the Anunnaki's early arrival on Earth.
The Owaspe Bible states that the Earth is at least 4 billion years old, and that at a certain point when they determined that the atmosphere and the essence of the planet would support life, that's when life began appearing.
Right.
So
puts our solar system and the planets in it at 7.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I'm sure ZS has something to add on this.
Yeah, we're almost out of time here, gentlemen, so we got to wrap it up here shortly. But ZS, go ahead.
Well, I have an amazing anecdote about that civilization which you mentioned in the Gobi Desert. There's a 20-year-old man here, we want to call him Crystal or Indigo Child, spontaneously drew a map of this beautiful land, and it was an artistic map covering up like an 8-foot by 4-foot sheet of plywood. He painted it and drew buildings and these lakes and waterfronts and very intricate map. And I took a look at it for a moment, and I went to the atlas, pulled it out, and it was the Gobi area when it was full of water. He was bringing through that image, the image of that map of the that civilization, Iyada's civilization himself. And I believe this young man was there and was feeling it, or had that experience. And another reference to that same land is calls it Rama, R-A-M-A, and it's the land mentioned in the Vedic scrolls regarding the Battle of Arjuna with Rama and other extraterrestrial gods in their flying cars, flying vessels, whatever, UFOs.
Now, the word Rama, or Rama, I think is how they pronounce it in India, the word Rama means dark.
Yeah.
Is that of any significance to you?
Well, it was Rama. That civilization was in fighting with the Atlantis, and they won. But what resulted was the destruction of the planet and knocking 95% of the people off the planet.
Sort of like what's going on today, in its infant stages, if you want to call it that. I mean, it's been going on for thousands of years, but when you begin questioning the purpose for that, obviously, really the answers are off planet, aren't they?
Or, yes.
Or they are derived from off planet.
Right.
This planet has been a stopover point, a general store, a galactic general store for those that want certain types of heavy metals or minerals.
No, so that's where Fort Knox went. It's all in space.
Yeah, it's probably on Mars right now, or somewhere in Paraguay.
Okay.
You know, but well, gentlemen, any closing comment? We got to keep them brief. But Ken, would you like to make or ZS, since you've got the mic right now, would you like to make a closing comment about all these topics?
Well, going back to what Ken was feeling, that with nearly 7 billion people on the planet, the frequency is rising. And in the last month, I've had an amazing situation where I had this item, which I put secured in a box. And then when I got to a destination, unloaded this item, or was trying to unload it, I couldn't find it. I could not find it. So I actually called someone who has had experience with losing things and finding them again.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her, could she check and make sure that this item had not gone into the fourth dimension? Anyway, she put her hands on the table, and there the item appeared between her hands.
Oh, wow.
So things are...
Wow.
She's had lots of experiences like that since 1987. And this happened in Alberta. And so the veils are thin.
I had an experience like that with car keys a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
That I know I had in my possession and showed up in a completely different place where I hadn't even been, and I stumbled across it. So
the veils are thinning, and those who are trying to keep things dark cannot control the thinning veils, and things are disappearing and popping back in, and disappearing and popping back in. And with 7 billion people rising in frequency, there's going to be a lot of interesting things happening, and mostly on the positive.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Ken, your closing thoughts.
Yes, I'll just mention that the next time we talk, I want to bring up an area of healing that everyone can learn to do themselves at home, and we all have the materials that are necessary to use this technique at home. This very simple, commonly found material. So I'll save it as a teaser for our next get-together. But just to follow up on ZS's thoughts there, and the sort of theme that you, you know, mentioned when you opened the show, and the theme of the song that you played, etc. Everyone who's listening to this conversation tonight needs to bear in mind this principle that we get energy, we get satisfaction from life by doing things of a positive nature. And therefore, if you're weighing yourself down by allowing yourself to become depressed by reading too many doom and gloom articles or mainstream media psyops, which we've tried to emphasize here, that particularly this whole deal about Japan, it was a staged event, and the so-called, quote, fallout of it is also staged, and that all the bad news we hear from Bernanke saying, oh, well, gee, the recovery isn't going quite as well, and the ridiculous blather we heard from the illegal alien, I guess yesterday he gave his talk, etc., is really not that consequential, because these people are dishonest people. They're dealing in non-truths, and don't allow this to lower you, to, you know, make you upset or go into a, you know, into a depressive state. Just the opposite. Realize that these are merely puppets. They're puppets. They're strings attached to all these guys, and even most AM talk radio show hosts parrot the, you know, the party line that Tavistock wants us to believe. NPR is kind of the royalty of propaganda on at least with national American radio. NPR is your chief, you know, propaganda outlet that's invading homes from coast to coast. So just bear that in mind. I listen to these stations all day long to just occupy my mind as I'm doing work, but I'm certainly able to hear and recognize the BS. And the stories, they're part of the story is, we talked about it earlier, the Nebraska thing. They're trying to set us up for a California earthquake, for instance. We have this California preparation PSAs. I hear it on the radio every single day, and telling us how we need to be prepared. They're trying to prepare you for a staged event, and mm-hmm. you know that they're trying to pull off in the Midwest, in the Mississippi Valley. It's not happening, because people and forces are undoing their little games by thinking and acting in a positive way. So I got to remind people of that. Do something that is positive. Engage in activities that are positive and will unbind the straitjacket that the New World Order gang has tried to put us in. If you have the energy and time, try to get rid of politicians who are just playing, you know, the Democrat versus Republican game. Forget those clowns. Find new anti-New World Order candidates who, you know, are independent of party affiliation, and see what you can do first on the local level, the municipal level, the state level, and from there on the national level. That would be very useful if we can get some of these treasonous clowns out of office, so that we're not subjected to all their machinations. But even if you don't have time for that, whatever you have time for, live your life in a positive way. Think positive thoughts, and, you know, raise your kids and teach them the golden rules, et cetera, and don't allow all this negative psyop stuff that they try to bombard us with to overshadow your positive thrust in your life.
You know, with all the technology that we possess as a planet, not necessarily in the hands of the sane, rational, everyday Joe in humanity, but in the hands of these psychopaths, they're conducting exercises there while these threats and this fear mongering is going on the full length of the Missouri River, and certainly there in Nebraska, in regard to this Fort Calhoun, nuclear power plant. And it won't be long until they blame it on 19 box cutter wielding beavers responsible right. for the dams. So that said, I'd like to remind the listening audience that it's been recently revealed to me that there are at least 180 billion inhabited planets in our galaxy alone. Consider that, there may be some people who have outgrown the box cutter mentality, outgrown fear, and are living a life of wonderment because they know who they are, and they know from where they came and where they're going. With that in mind, I want to thank you, Ken Adachi and Zornova Star Livingstone, for being on the show, and let the listening audience know you'll be back with us again next Tuesday, the 28th of June. Thank you both.
Okay, thanks, Don.
Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio. And as I just said, our guests tonight were Ken Adachi and Z.S. Livingstone. You can visit Ken's website, where a lot of Z.S. Work is posted, as well as Ken's work, by going to educate-yourself.org. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints over at BBS Radio tonight. We had Seth Hendrick on the sound. I want to extend an apology to the listening audience for the disruption of the music portion of the show at the outset, and we'll get that straightened out. That wasn't BBS's fault. Over at BBS, I want to also thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night, when my special guest will be scientist, inventor, Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.